From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And today we have as our guest, former Congressman and former Secretary of the Army, John McHugh. Welcome, John.
Bob, great to see you. Great to be with you.
Great. Mr. McHugh was an eight-term member of Congress who represented a district in rural New York from 1993 to 2009. And while he was a member of Congress, he served 6 years as chairman of our postal subcommittee. And in fact, he leaves a tremendous legacy, not only because of his own work, but because two of the staff directors that worked under him went on. One is currently the chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission. That's Robert Tabb. And another one of his staff directors, Dan Blair, was the first chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission. After Mr. McHugh's tenure in Congress, he was nominated and confirmed by the United States Senate as the Secretary of the U.S. Army, and now he is serving as the chair of the Package Coalition, which is very involved in postal matters. Mr. McHugh, can you briefly explain who the Package Coalition is, why it was created, what its mission is, and what its legislative focus is this year?
Sure. I can give it as briefly as I'm able. We came together about a year ago, and there was an interesting, rather unusual confluence of events in the postal universe, if you will. First of all, the 10-year review by the Postal Regulatory Commission was underway, and one of the things that would be under consideration were the so-called attributable cost. How much does each class of competitive products have to give back to the financial overhead of the Postal Service. Second of all, the Office of Management and Budget had an analysis of various federal agencies. One of the recommendations was the possible consideration of the privatization of the Postal Service. There were two major bills that have been largely agreed upon, bipartisan bills in the House and the Senate, that can always be a vehicle for things that could affect virtually any aspect of the postal business model, but we were focused on packages. And then the presidential task force that came out and made some, we think, very unhelpful and negative recommendations vis-a-vis packages. So the coalition came together. It's an organization of more than 20 iconic brands: Amazon, Publishers Clearinghouse, Pitney Bowes, the National Retail Federation, on and on and on. And our sole focus has been to try to get the facts on the table vis-a-vis the great contribution, the importance of preserving that contribution that packages make back to the Postal Service's operational budget and their bottom line.
But let us flesh that out a little bit. There is a tremendous amount of interdependence between the members of the Package Coalition and the United States Postal Service. On one hand, parcel market has a tremendous impact on Postal Service revenues and volumes. On the other hand, because of the Postal Service's reach into all areas of America, the parcel market has a tremendous reliance on the Postal Service. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship?
Yeah, as you said, they're highly interdependent, and from a financial perspective, a very positive relationship vis-a-vis the Postal Service's finances. Obviously, the great advantage the Postal Service has in the package delivery realm is the fact that they go to over 150 million delivery points 6 days a week, and for packages 7 days a week, as the case may be. And that provides them a certain economy of scale and reach that other private delivery and express companies really don't have. What that means for consumers, the other end, that people need the Postal Service for that service, is that they can provide and get products to them and back as necessary at a highly affordable rate. There's a reality in the parcel shipping industry that if you live in a rural area, which is, you know, still wide swaths of this country, or in underserved, hard-to-reach urban areas, the private express carriers, by and large, charge you extra. Some call it a gas tax, some call it a rural surcharge tax, but it costs you more. And that artificial addition can make a big difference to people buying products that they find are important to their lives, or in the extreme, products that are essential to their well-being and health, like prescription drugs and such.
Sure, sometimes the surcharge, the rural surcharge, or the postal reliant community surcharge is a disincentive to purchase things over the internet in certain communities because of that price.
It certainly makes a difference. My district when I was in Congress was the largest geographic district east of the Mississippi. That meant it was highly rural. Took a long way to get to the necessary people to make up a congressional district. And for a lot of those folks who were, not of high income, they have to be very careful in the consumer choices they make. And the difference of a few dollars just on the delivery charges can cause them to make decisions not to purchase that they might otherwise make. So there's no question from a financial aspect, the Postal Service's package delivery is very, very important to them. But it's also a matter, as originally conceived in the formation of the United States Postal Service, that it's a way, as intended, that keeps the country from a communications, social, and economic perspective connected no matter where you live, no matter how far. You can receive mail and packages at a consistent and affordable price.
Now, also the consumer is reliant on the Postal Service more and more on what's called return logistics. That is, if I order something via the internet, whether it comes through via one of the competitors of the Postal Service or the Postal Service itself, if I need to return the product, most of the time I will have to use the Postal Service anyway, because of its ubiquity.
Yeah, that's an important part of it. I mean, people think of packages, okay, I really care about my delivery. But if you look at the purchasing patterns, folks are never sure what size of shoe or pants or blouse they're actually going to get. And often they order two or three. You're not going to keep all of them in all likelihood. So you're going to have what's turned out to be a very vibrant return mailing of those packages that has benefited the Postal Service. Clearly, the interesting aspect, particularly on last mile delivery, the private express carriers, great companies like UPS, Federal Express, and some of the more regional ones often rely upon the Postal Service as well to complete their deliveries.
Right. I don't know how many times a UPS truck comes through your hometown of Pierpont Manor.
We see the postal carriers far more often. I'll just leave it at that.
I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about some data points with regard to the Postal Service and the increasing influence that the parcel market has on the Postal Service. As we all know, and we've seen it for years, the Postal Service revenue has been declining. In fact, in the most recent filing with the Postal Regulatory Commission, the Postal Service reported a net operating loss of $2.1 billion, attributable in large part to a loss of 4.1% in first class mail, very profitable and historically has been a very profitable part of the mail stream. When the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act was sort of signed into law, postal revenue attributable to first class mail, as you recall, you were a member of Congress at that time, was around 51% of the mail. It was 51% of the revenue. And now first class mail accounts for only around 37% of the revenue. There's an increasing influence that parcels have had on mail revenue. Can you discuss that increase?
Yeah, I think the first thing that needs to be affirmed as fact is that while your data points are absolutely correct, Bob, and I'll talk about those a bit in a second, that first class mail continues to be an absolutely essential and critical part of the Postal Service's business activities. And in fact, on a volume per piece basis, is still the majority share. I don't want people to kind of pick up on the mantra that we've heard that I would argue is absolutely false, that somehow Today, the United States Postal Service is just a package delivery company. There's so much more. But having said that, there's no question that first-class monopoly mail revenues and the mail stream is going down. That's just a change in the way in which people are likely to communicate today, emails and cell phones and smartphones and such. How long that continues is anybody's guess, but I don't think you can deny that it's happening. While at the same time, and a bright spot in the American economy has been this kind of eruption of e-commerce, highly beneficial to small business people particularly, has continued to increase in its value to the Postal Service's bottom line. And if you look at just the last 9 years or so, the package revenues after covering cost and after contributing back to the overhead has grown to some $8 billion a year. And if you look at projections and models, if done correctly, that can only be expected to increase even more. So the thing that concerns us as members of the Package Coalition is that there's no question Postal Service has fiscal problems, economic challenges, administrative challenges, some of which you've touched upon. But if you really want to stabilize the Postal Service's fiscal and economic posture, you probably ought not to start with disrupting and artificially inflicting harm upon what is arguably the one bright spot in its current business model, that is packages.
Well, let me talk about that for a moment. In a recent postal forum, you were quoted as saying that certain recommendations within the president's task force on the U.S. postal system would have a chilling effect on e-commerce. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Well, there were a number of reasons, but I think the most critical recommendation with respect to chilling the market as a whole was that of where the task force said that packages delivered to the Postal Service should be divided into two categories, one deemed essential and the others apparently non-essential. Now, first of all, administratively, I'm not sure who I would want to make those decisions. You were kind enough to mention my hometown of Pierpont Manor. For those, I'm sure, very few of your listeners who don't know where Pierpont Manor, New York is, it's up closer to the Canadian border than anything else. I was home a couple of weeks ago. We got 3 inches of snow. The last time I was home before that, it was 18 degrees below zero. The point being, I consider my winter gloves essential. Mm-hmm. Anybody who has to go outside, I think, would as well. Would the new classification be considered essential? And if so, how far south could you go until they're considered non-essential, whereas one person on one side of the street gets the gloves as essential and the other side doesn't get the gloves? It's just an administrative nightmare, in my judgment. But more than that, it would, I think, lead to the total disruption of the current package delivery and package revenue system, whereby we don't have to make those choices. Because of those economies of scale and scope that I mentioned before, going to every household every 6 days a week, 7 days for packages, you're allowed to gain those economies and efficiencies into stabilizing the prices for packages. But if you separate out into non-essential, you're in essence saying to a postal delivery person, okay, go take this letter mail to Joe Blow on the street corner, and then come back and get the package and take it, and we'll charge that separately. They want to create, or the suggestion would create, a totally separate industry, absolutely disrupting the economies that I mentioned that allow the current affordability of packages, no matter where you live. And that is, as we discussed just a few minutes ago, likely to make people make hard choices and forego purchases they'd probably otherwise choose to do.
What's interesting about the sort of the segregation of the market, the postal market, is that in postal legislation that was passed in 2006, we segregated it once from competitive and non-competitive in terms of pricing regime, about what level of flexibility the Postal Service has in pricing competitive products versus those that are monopoly. this would take the competitive products and further segregate that market into, of those competitive products, and maybe even maybe market dominant products, the ones that are deemed to be essential by some body, whether it be the PRC or by statute or by administrative action, would, as you say, disrupt the entire postal network.
Yeah, but I think taking them out totally would be more than just separating them. I mean, that's what it would do physically, but I think you have to look at the economic impact of doing that.
Yeah, also, as I understand, the reason why the task force wanted to take out what deemed to be non-essential was to make it not exposed to the universal service obligation. And if the universal service obligation didn't apply to non-essential sort of items, the Postal Service, by economics, could decide not to deliver every day, not to every address, to sort of dramatically change its pricing, or be compelled to by virtue of it, the product being deemed non-essential.
Yeah, I can't say for sure that was a task force intent, but I can tell you doing what they suggest, dividing parcels into those two categories, would do just that, be a total disruption of the universal service obligation, which, by the way, has included packages, at least in operational administrative assumptions, since almost day one. And in fact, it was stated by Congress back in the early 1900s because of the pricing of the private express carriers that packages would be a part of it. So, as you said, it wouldn't ultimately be in effect on the negative side just by taking the universal service obligation off of packages, because you're opening that Pandora's box, and where does it end?
And also from a very practical, as you point out, from a practical issue, if you take out non-essential parcels or you separate them out and take them out of the system, how do you direct post offices as they sort of process different packages to make that determination? Do they have to have a separate fleet of vehicles for non-essential? Do they have to have a separate employment, staffing for that also? One could argue that lays the groundwork for actually a privatized sort of solution to a problem that may not exist.
I would argue it's a problem that doesn't exist, and the financial aspects of the Postal Service's revenues would, I think, validate that clearly, but that's exactly the point. And it's like your Uber driver showing up, taking one of you to the restaurant, and then coming back and taking the second one to the same restaurant, even though you both wanted to go together. It just drives up cost. And frankly, that's the objective of some whose sole interest here is helping their own bottom line, which I understand. But it's at the cost of small business people, many large businesses across this country, small consumers, wherever they may be across this land.
The ability of the Postal Service to service at a high level the package coalition is reliant on a viable Postal Service. Can I ask, what changes do you believe the package coalition would be promoting in order to ensure the viability of the Postal Service to deliver for its members?
Well, from a package coalition perspective, and it's when you have such a diverse and high-profile number of companies within that coalition, you might well recognize that they have individual company perspectives on that very question. But the coalition across the board is just focused on one aspect of postal reform, even though our member companies are involved in their own efforts on the wider aspect of postal reform and postal legislation. But for this coalition, it's packages, 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 which underscores, I think, both the importance of this to these companies and to the thousands upon thousands of retailers, large, medium, and small, represented by the National Retail Federation, for example, and the importance of this to them and the viability of the future of the Postal Service.
Last question, Mr. McHugh.
Yes, sir.
You've served as a member of the House of Representatives. You've served as Secretary of the United States Army. And now you're immersed deeper than you probably were as chairman of the Postal Subcommittee in a very specific area of postal financing, which has been the toughest job.
Well, they both have their challenges. Obviously, sequestration, two wars in Iraq, one and the other in Afghanistan during my more than 6 years in the Pentagon. And when you're talking about people's lives and the future of freedom, that's awfully darn important. But coming back home, what's important to the American people more prevalently on a day-to-day basis when they stop to think about it is that. That delivery person from the USPS showing up 6 days a week. And as e-commerce has continued to evolve, that becomes even more vital to them. So I don't think there's a solid answer to that, but both have been a great honor. And I continue to have the opportunity to work on postal for better or worse.
Mr. McHugh, it's been a tremendous honor having you here today on my podcast. I look forward to working with you and for the National Association of Postal Supervisors to work with the Package Coalition in the future. With that,
I'm going to send right back and write myself a letter and make